So the individuals who were saunaing 2 to 3 times per week had a 22% lower chance of sudden cardiac death, which is a heart attack, 63% lower for those who were saunaing 4 to 7 times per week. That is profound. 63% lower if you're doing it 4 times per week compared to somebody who is doing it once a week. Same study looking at heart disease. Again, the individuals who were bathing 2 to 3 times per week had a 23% lower chance of CHD and 48% lower chance of heart disease if you are saunaing 4 to 7 sessions per week.
It isn't about being perfect. It's about being better. Hello, my name is Dr. Stephanie Stima, and I host expert discussions with thought leaders in all facets of health, including nutrition, fitness, hormones, stress management, performance, recovery, longevity, health span, and energy production. On this show, we discuss complex science, but then we also alchemize it into actionable everyday living. The ultimate goal with the show is to assist you in making informed decisions about your health and to catapult you into being the hero in your own life.
Hello, my Betties. Welcome back to another episode of Better with Dr. Stephanie. It's me, your host, Dr. Stephanie Estima. And today we have a solo episode, just you and me today. And we're going to be talking about sauna use. Sauna, the only word in the English language that we have borrowed from Finland. It's the only Finnish word, rather, said more correctly, only Finnish word that made it into the English language, the sauna or sauna. So I am very bullish on sauna use, and I'm very bullish on cold therapy, cold water immersion, cold plunging. And I wanted to take a few solo episodes to actually go over the science and relate this to why a woman in her 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s might be considering sauna use as a regular health practice, both as a recovery practice, and then as you'll see, it is going to be very important as we navigate perimenopause and menopause for our cardiovascular health, and something called hypertrophy. So I'll just drop that little Easter egg in now. And of course, you can always just, if you look at the timestamps of this episode, you could just fast forward if you just want to figure out what is she talking about with hypertrophy. Why are there two hypers there? So yeah, sauna use is something that I have recently integrated into my everyday routine. And I'll talk a little bit about what my routine is today as well. And I wanted to share some of the science as I've been going on this geeky magic carpet ride, figuring out how temperature manipulation can be beneficial for women.
Transform your health and fitness with the Carol Bike, the smartest, most effective exercise backed by science. You can experience unparalleled results in just a minimum of 15 minutes per week. Per week, thanks to AI personalized workouts tailored to your age and your fitness level. You will increase fat loss, train up your strength and your speed, and have better energy, something that every woman, including myself, absolutely covets. I always say that women are the original biohackers. If there's a way for us to feel better and look better, we are all over it. Carol Bike, in my opinion, is one of the best pieces of cardio equipment that you can invest in. Studies prove that Carol helps you achieve a 12% increase in cardio fitness, lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and reduces blood pressure by 5% in as little as 8 weeks. Begin your transformation with the Carol Bike today and enjoy $100 off using the promo code BETTER for our beautiful Better Podcast listeners. That's BETTER. All you have to do is visit carolbike.com.
Phospholipids are the building blocks that make up your cell membranes, and they are responsible for allowing nutrients in and waste products out of your cells, as well as protecting your cells from toxins and invaders. You lose phospholipids as you age, so both our production goes down and they become damaged from exposures to things like glyphosate and heavy metals and all those other fun chemicals and pesticides that we're exposed to on the daily. This is where BodyBio PC comes in. BodyBio PC is a liposomal phospholipid complex designed to nourish your cells for healthy aging, optimal brain function, gut health, a better metabolism, and much more. Body Bio PC contains concentrated levels of phosphatidylcholine, which is essential for memory, phosphatidylethanolamine, which is vital for mitochondrial function, and phosphatidylinositol, which is supportive to the brain and neurotransmission. Prioritizing your cellular health is absolutely foundational for your health and well-being as you age and you are navigating perimenopause. You can save 15% off of your first order with code BETTER at checkout at bodybio.com. So head over to bodybio.com/better and use BETTER at checkout. Let's start with just some basic definitions. Dry sauna, steam sauna, infrared sauna, what the heck are all of these? I recently posted on Instagram a picture of my emerging, we'll say developing health room where I have a cold plunge and an infrared sauna. And I had as many views as I had on that story. I had probably just as many questions like, why did you choose an infrared sauna? Why didn't you choose a dry sauna? Why didn't you choose this kind of sauna? So I thought we might just start with some basic definitions. So a dry sauna is going to be heated with fire, hot stones, gas, or electricity. Steam saunas are going to generate steam by applying water on a heating element of some sort. An infrared sauna uses infrared heaters to emit light that's going to deliver that radiant heat that's absorbed into the surface of the skin. And then you'll also potentially have a fourth category, which is a hybrid, which is going to take any one of the above that I just mentioned and sort of combine them. Now, for my electricity bill and for ease of use, I have gone with an infrared sauna, and I'll talk a little bit about my routine and my reasons for choosing that in a moment. But just wanted to double click on infrared saunas for a moment, because infrared saunas can also be broken down into near infrared saunas, far infrared saunas, or full spectrum infrared saunas. So the main difference being, of course, is the wavelength. So a far infrared sauna, as you might imagine, they're going to generate longer wavelength that's going to penetrate deeper into the skin, allowing for, you know, some might argue more therapeutic benefits. A near infrared sauna is going to be able to generate shorter wavelengths of light, which remain closer to the surface of the skin. So, and then you'll have the full spectrum infrared, which is going to have a combination of both far and near. And usually there's medium wave in there as well. So let's actually talk about some of the benefits that saunas can impart and when you're doing them regularly. There's a lot of research, and I'll put a little caveat in here as we dive into some of the science. Most of the research has been done on traditional outdoor or a dry sauna or even steam saunas. So we don't actually see a robust amount of literature on infrared, although that is changing. If you actually go into PubMed and type in infrared sauna, you can actually see a lot of people are now trying to study and compare the effects of an infrared sauna and how those stack up with an already robust body of evidence that supports steam or dry sauna use. So let's talk about the effect that sauna use can have on metabolism. This is a fun place to start, and hopefully we'll hook you in to listen to cardiovascular disease and hypertrophy. But speeding up metabolism is a well-established benefit of sauna use, and part of, you know, does that through regulating the appetite. It increases metabolism by improving oxygen utilization. And when a goal is weight loss, it's going to help fuel a reduction of the weight loss, primarily through a reduction in both water weight and body fat. So when we look at how different mechanisms, how we might be fueling that excess, you know, body fat utilization or that water weight utilization, with sauna specifically, it does seem to be, and you've probably guessed this, it is about increasing your core body temperature. So as you're increasing your body temperature, this is going to lead to a greater cardiac output and a higher heart rate. So let's talk about studies. In one 2019 study, this will be linked for you in the show notes, for my, I like to call you my medium and my dark roast Bettys. So the light roast Bettys are like, just give me the thing. Just tell me the thing. My medium roast Bettys, you guys want a little bit more detail. And my dark roast Bettys, you guys are like, tell me every single mechanism, every single pathway. I need to know it all. So I don't know how you identify light roast, medium roast, dark roast, but we're going to go a little medium roast here and talk about this 2019 study. These are my little nicknames for you guys. I don't know if you picked up on that, but in the Bettyverse, sort of behind the scenes, you are either a light roast Betty, a medium roast Betty, or a dark roast Betty, just because I love coffee so much. So that's why That's why you are named that way. Okay, so however you identify, 2019 study, researchers evaluated the effects of repeated sauna use, and this was done in a dry sauna, in overweight and sedentary men, okay? So the way that they designed the study was they had them go into the dry sauna for 10 minutes and then take a 5-minute break. So 10 minutes and then like a 5-minute cool down, if you will. So they stepped out of the sauna, cooled down for 5 minutes, and then went back again for another 10 minutes. And they repeated that cycle 4 times. Okay. And so they were looking at the calories that they were burning. They were looking at their metabolic rate, how that changed while they were in the sauna. So the first 10-minute session that the participants of the study were in the sauna, they burned about 73 calories on average. Okay. So not bad. If you do that 4 times, you can do 73 by 4. It's about 280 calories. Not too bad. But the interesting thing was that their calories kept going up the more sauna sessions they did. So by the final session, by the 4th session, the calorie expenditure had almost doubled. So it was up at about 134 calories in that 10-minute session on average. So I thought that that was really interesting. So you can make the argument that either that protocol, so going in for 10 minutes and then bringing your core body back down to regular and then repeating that several times, is a way to augment your metabolic output. Or I would also assume that you would be able to stay in the sauna if you're able to train yourself. Just, I mean, staying in a dry sauna for 40 minutes is it, that's something. So that's probably why the design of the study was 10 minutes and then 5 minutes off, 10 minutes and 5 minutes off, because it is so hot. The heat in a dry sauna will get much hotter than maybe it might in an infrared sauna. So something to consider in terms of sauna use and its impact on your metabolism. Now, I will say, and I will state my bias, I've chosen an infrared sauna because I can actually stay in longer because the temperature doesn't get quite as extreme. And in the same vein that I think that females don't need to be cold plunging at as extreme temperatures as maybe men do in order to elicit the same effects, I would argue the same is probably true on the other end of the spectrum in terms of heat as well. So, okay, so it has its effect, nice profound effect on metabolism in terms of burning calories. I want to talk about cardiovascular health in a big way because you've heard me, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I think that women potentially overemphasize succumbing to a cancer like breast cancer. I mean, we're taught all the time. It's like, walk for cancer here. Here's the pink ribbon to do this. And I'm not saying that cancer doesn't happen. Of course it does. But the likelihood of breast cancer, for example, that's the one that a lot of women are very concerned with, versus cardiac disease. There is no question that the big killer in women is cardiovascular disease. So we really want to be thinking about our heart, particularly in perimenopause and menopause, as we are seeing overall declining levels of estradiol, right? So estradiol is our metabolic superhero, our cardiovascular superhero in a way. It keeps our arterial wall supple, helps to improve vasoconstriction and vasodilation. That's just like the opening and closing of the arteries. And as we are in perimenopause, of course, there can be wildly vacillating levels of estradiol month to month, and it can just seem like you're on this wild estrogen roller coaster. But the overall trend for a woman in perimenopause is down, right? The overall trend for estradiol is down. And so when we actually move through menopause, that, you know, one day where you haven't had your period for 12 months, it's almost like your estrogen has jumped off a cliff, right? Maybe 1% of the original levels of estradiol that you had in your body, which is going to put us at a major, major risk for cardiovascular disease. So much so that we actually see our risk for CVD, cardiovascular disease, equates our male counterparts after menopause. So prior to menopause, you actually don't see a lot of heart disease in women. You know, if you're controlling for lifestyle factors, you know, smoking and exercising and eating a relatively healthy diet, that kind of thing, you don't really see a lot of heart disease in women under 40. What we do start to see is after menopause, that rate continues to creep up and we have about a 10-year lag, right? So we start to see much more cardiovascular disease about 10 years after menopause. So something to be thinking about in your 40s as well, to be promoting a very healthy cardiopulmonary system. Okay. I digress. Let's talk about how sauna supports cardiovascular health. Okay, so there's a couple of ways that it does. The first is by lowering inflammation, right? So it's going to reduce oxidative stress. It's going to decrease blood lipids and blood pressure levels. Okay. And it may also help reduce that stiffness that I was talking about in the arterial wall and improve the function of the cells that line the blood vessels. Okay. So this is actually quite interesting because that lining of the blood cells is not that thick. Like the cells that line the blood vessels are actually quite thin. And so this is where we start to see our cholesterol levels start to go a little bit wonky in perimenopause and menopause, our LDLs in particular, and triglycerides. We tend to see those increase quite a bit. And really, this is why if you are doing lipids in your 40s and 50s, you really should know your LDLP, not just your LDLC. So the LDLP is your particle number. And this is going to tell you literally how many particles there are, because as you know, it's really just a game of statistics. Like the more particles you have, the higher the incidence that one of those particles is going to slam into the wall of the arterial lining, infiltrate it, and then create this sort of infarct and this, we'll call it like chaos underneath the lining of the wall, which will eventually form a plaque, et cetera. So we want to be thinking about all of the ways, so cardiovascular work, zone two training, even high intensity intervals, resistance training, all of these things are going to be positively impacting our suppleness of the arterial wall, but sauna use also is another well-documented way to do that. So let's talk a little bit about sauna use and cardiovascular disease. Again, looking at a study, they were following sauna users over, I believe it was 21 years, and I'll link this study in the show notes as well. So they were following these sauna users over 21 years, and what they found was that of the cohort that they were looking at, when we compared the participants who reported one bathing session per week, the risk of sudden cardiac deaths was 22% lower for the individuals who were bathing 2 to 3 times per week. So the baseline was individuals who were doing sauna once a week. Those who did sauna 2 or 3 times a week had a 22% less or lower risk of sudden cardiac death. And it was 63% lower for individuals who were sauning 4 to 7 times per week. So I'll say that one more time. So the individuals who were sauning 2 to 3 times per week had a 22% lower chance of sudden cardiac death, which is a heart attack, 63% lower for those who are sauning 4 to 7 times per week. That is profound. 63% lower if you're doing it 4 times per week compared to somebody who is doing it once a week. So it appears that even the once a week isn't going to do the trick. It needs to be several times per week. Same study looking at so they're looking at heart disease. Again, the individuals who were bathing 2 to 3 times per week had a 23% lower chance of CHD and 48% lower chance of heart disease if you are sauning 4 to 7 sessions per week. I think that is incredible. Now, it is important for me to say that these studies were done in men, but it is worth noting, like I mentioned before, that the years after menopause, women do catch up to the male risk for heart disease. So I'm not saying that we're little men, but in menopause, we do become, our risks are more male-like, okay? Okay, so let's talk about all-cause mortality. Still looking at these sauna, how many times you're sauning per week, and looking at all-cause mortality. So all-cause mortality is basically like all deaths outside of like a tragic accident, like a car accident or something like that. So all deaths. So sauna bathing, again, 2 to 3 times per week was associated with a 24% decrease in all-cause mortality. If you are sauning 4 to 7 times per week, 40% reduction of all-cause mortality compared, again, to the individuals who were only sauning once per week. I think that these are part of the reason why I am so bullish on sauna, because as a woman mid to late 40s now, my cardiovascular health is the utmost importance to me. So my ability to continue to lift healthy, my ability to preserve muscle tissue, my ability to have a healthy heart and lungs, very top of my list. So saunaing is going to do that. Now, I will say that we haven't been able to have these sort of 21-year follow-ups with infrared saunas, right? But I do think that possibly infrared saunas may have the edge here slightly, and that's because you can stay in an infrared sauna for longer because the temperature, as I mentioned, doesn't get quite as high. Now, I don't have any research to back that up. That is my hunch, and we can check back the literature in 20 years when it catches up to to theories like that. And right now, I will say it is just a theory of mine, but I don't think that women need to expose ourselves to as extreme temperatures as maybe our male counterparts do.
An average person breathes 17,000 liters of air per day, making air quality crucial for better sleep, hormone production, and immune function. Indoor air is often 5 times more polluted than outside air. There's mold, there's pet dander, there's toxins, allergens, and even the sprays that you use to clean your home. It can all get into your lungs. After the wildfires last year and watching the air quality in my city plummet, I decided to do something about it. I decided on the Jasper Air Purifier because this company specializes in air quality and is the premier air filter for dental and medical offices. I have one in my main floor in my kitchen, and I just bought another one to put upstairs where the family sleeps at night. Jasper covers about 1,600 square feet and automatically adjusts how much purifying is needed based on the quality of the current air. It is quiet, it's beautiful looking, and blends into our modern decor. Get better sleep tonight by heading over to jasper.co/better. That's jasper.co/better to get 10% off of your Jasper unit today.
Okay, so growth hormone. I think that this is important. I want to talk about growth hormone because it is going to tie into what I want to talk about next, which is protein degradation and muscle mass preservation. Again, two things very high up on my list as I have the privilege of aging and aging well. Aging like a boss. That's what we're after. Okay, so a bit of a primer on growth hormone. We know that growth hormone regulates our fat, our muscle, our bone tissue in our bodies, and it does. It's involved in other aspects of our metabolism, like insulin and blood sugar levels. When we are young, so when we are, going through puberty, this is when we see growth hormone at its peak. It is literally driving the growth in terms of our height, right? And our long bone growth. That's actually how we grow, is the bones actually are continuously remodeling themselves, getting longer and longer and longer. Long bones, like think of the long bones, like our femurs, even our spine as well. We actually continue to grow until the epiphyseal plates of the bones close. And that's sort of in our mid-20s. We usually sort of have a cutoff of about 25. If you've ever seen an x-ray of a baby versus an adult, you'll probably notice how much more gray a baby skeleton is. And that's because the bones are not fully calcified yet. They're more cartilaginous, like they're full of more cartilage than they are actual bone. That's actually, if you've ever noticed a newborn's legs, they're quite bowed, right? And that's just because they've been like squished up in the womb and they sort of unwind in the 2 years after they have been born. But also there's these, if you look at an x-ray of a child, someone who's under 25 usually, but I'm talking about like a juvenile, like someone who's under even 10, you'll see that there's these weird almost caps at the end of long bones, like the humerus, the femur, radius, ulna, tibias, etc. That's the growth plate. Okay. So that at that point, when we see sort of the long bone and then there's this like little black line and then there's like another cap on top of it, that tells you that the growth plate is open, right? So that is the, if you're a nerd, that's the epiphyseal growth plate. And this is where that anabolism of 18 to 25 years takes place, where you can go from a cute, squishy little baby that's maybe, my children, gosh, my kids were long. They were like 21 inches long, each of them. But, however long your baby is when they're born, to their height at somewhere between 18 and 25 is where they're going to reach their sort of full height. Again, if you look in your mid-20s, if you were to x-ray that same person, the bones are going to be much more white in presentation versus gray. And that's because they've calcified. There's been a calcium deposits. It's almost like a savings account. You've been depositing calcium and other minerals into it. But now that little cap that you see at the end of the growth, like that growth plate. So if you see the long bone, that little lucent, that little black line, and then the cap, that's gone because the growth plate has now fused with the bone and now there's no more growing. Okay. Okay. I digress. Okay. So that's growth hormone. Okay. That's what happens. That's how we grow, is that the growth plates in our skeletons are open. So growth hormone naturally now declines, right, in our 20s. So now we reach, the growth hormone sort of reaches its peak in puberty, and then there's a slow and gradual fall off from the mid-20s onward. And adults who have lower growth hormone, which, I mean, there's many reasons for that. There can be a primary reason, like a problem with the pituitary gland or hypothalamus, or it can be also poor lifestyle choices. I'll go through some symptoms that you might may or may not identify with, but a lot of people with low levels of growth hormone, either primary or secondary. So primary would be like a pituitary or hypothalamic issue, and secondary might be lifestyle choices. You might see poor bone density, which will lead eventually to osteoporosis if it's untreated. Reduced muscle mass. So your muscle mass is going to be lower. You are going to be very fatigued. You might also be depressed. So when we say depressed, we would be looking for almost a qualification of dysthymia. So at least depressive symptoms for 2 weeks straight. You may experience poor memory. You may see more increased body fat around the waist, decreased energy levels for the things that you want to be doing, a decreased capacity for exercise, and an increased risk of heart disease. Now, I probably just described every woman in perimenopause, so I don't want you to freak out. It's like you don't have a pituitary tumor, you know, it's like, it's not a tumor. It's, you know, what we're talking about is this natural, and I should say this, maybe it is, like maybe there is something going on with the pituitary or the, you know, in the hypothalamus, but the more likely explanation is that there is a gradual decline in growth hormone as we age. So by the time you reach 45, 47, 52, some of these things are starting to happen for you. And we want to be thinking about ways that we can naturally stimulate growth hormone. And by the way, I wonder if anybody caught my my horrible Schwarzenegger impression there. It's not the tumor. So if anyone can tell me where that's from, maybe we'll do something. We'll shout you out on Instagram. So if you can remember what Arnold movie that's from, and at me on Instagram, we'll see if we can do something fun for you. Okay, so back to growth hormone. One of the benefits actually of being a woman is that we can overcome this lower levels of growth hormone easier than our male counterparts can. So typically we actually, when we're exercising, we actually reach our peak growth hormone levels, like after you've started exercise, about 20 or 30 minutes into a workout, which is awesome, because when you look at the guys, they have to work out somewhere around 40 to 60 minutes to actually reach their peak. So we can be much more efficient in terms of our ability to bring about peak GH, peak growth hormone secretion. So I talk about growth hormone because, as you might imagine, sauna use can also increase growth hormone, right? And in so doing, it can amplify the effects of a weightlifting session by protecting against the free radical damage after a heavy workout. It can aid in re-muscle growth and help with muscle soreness. Those DOMS, those delayed onset of muscle soreness that can happen when you are training very hard. So let's talk a little bit about growth hormone and muscle protein synthesis and recovery, because one of the reasons why many gyms will have a sauna in them and why many people actually like to hop in the sauna right after hitting the gym is because of this heat exposure, reducing some of the cell damage that can happen during a workout. It can also increase the expression of heat shock proteins. We're going to talk about HSPs today, heat shock proteins, which in and of themselves can help boost protein synthesis and stimulate muscle growth. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this hypertrophy that I've been sort of teasing you with during our time together here. So as you very well know, exercise can induce muscular hypertrophy, right? So when we are breaking down our muscles, your body is going to repair those myocytes to make better and stronger muscle cells, right? Heat also does the same. So heat is also going to induce muscular hypertrophy. So when we combine those two together, when we are combining a weight workout in the gym followed by a sauna session, these can synergize together and produce something called hypertrophy. Okay. So whenever we think about muscle protein synthesis, at any given time, your muscles are performing like a balance or a balancing act, if you will, between new protein synthesis and degradation of existing protein, right? It's the same with your bones, right? At any given time, your bones are balancing growth or osteoblastic activity compared to osteoclastic activity, which is bone breakdown. Same is true for muscles, right? The important thing with your muscles is the net, right? It's net protein synthesis, which is basically like what muscle proteins have been gained minus what muscle proteins have been lost. So your net loss, let's say, of muscle protein degradation occurs during muscle use because you're degrading the muscle during that, and disuse, like being sedentary. So this is actually where the sauna can really help both with your gains with a Z, if you're trying to put on muscle tissue, but it can also help if you're injured. So let me explain what I mean by that. So heat acclimation, or exposing yourself to high heats like you might in an infrared or a dry or a steam sauna, whatever sauna, is going to reduce protein degradation. And as a result, it's going to increase your net protein synthesis and thus your muscle hypertrophy. So hyperthermic conditioning, or that's like a fancy word for sauna use, does it through the three mechanisms that I've already mentioned. So it's induction of heat shock proteins, robust induction of growth hormone, which we've talked about, and also improving your insulin sensitivity. So exercise induces both protein synthesis and degradation in skeletal muscles, but then it's the net protein synthesis that actually causes the hypertrophy. So when you exercise, you're obviously increasing the load, like the mechanical workload on the muscles, and that's going to increase the demand of the energetic need of the muscle cell, right? The mitochondria in each of these cells kick into gear to help kind of meet that demand and start sucking in the oxygen, essentially, found in your blood in order to produce new energy and form ATP, right? That is known as oxidative phosphorylation. Cool cats might call it oxphos because it is a really long word. And with saunas, of course, we know that this is also a stress, right? Just like exercise is a stress, heat, extreme heat, is also a stress. We call it a hormetic stress or a use stress because you can't stay in a sauna indefinitely. You can only go in there for short bursts of time. And it's that temporary stress that's designed to help us adapt over the long term, right? And the heat is going to cause heat stress. So the heat stress or the U stress, the hormetic stress of heat, is going to increase the expression of genes that code for these heat shock proteins. And now the body's stress response is to heat up by increasing those heat shock proteins. So why do we care about heat shock proteins? What are these things? Well, they repair damaged proteins in the body. So they make sure that those proteins have that beautiful 3D structure. There's no folding of the proteins. They're not 2D, they're 3D. Heat shock proteins generally also scavenge free radicals and promote glutathione recycling, which is our master antioxidant in the body. So they're also going to have a reduction in your like systemic inflammation in the body. So through these two mechanisms, they are preventing degradation of oxidized proteins and damaged proteins. So any proteins that are reoxidized or damaged, they're going to be labeled for destruction. So they prevent that from happening, which is going to cause, you know, all that to say that this is going to cause an increase in net protein synthesis, right? So ladies in your 40s and 50s and your 60s, why is this important, right? We need that workload stimulus, right? The resistance training, but the heat stress, when you add on top of the mechanical stress of training, when you add heat stress, that's also going to replicate all of the items that I just discussed, right? And I would say that when we are using sauna in conjunction with a weightlifting workout, it's going to amplify your efforts in the gym, because now you have this mechanical workload and now you have the hormetic heat stress, which is going to help preserve that lean tissue. And then the other thing I'll say is when we're injured, It can also preserve our lean muscle tissue when we are unable to work out, right? So we've been discussing kind of how this heat shock, you know, these heat stress or this hypothermic conditioning can prevent muscle atrophy, right? It's the net protein synthesis that we are looking at. So if you're injured, you can continue, let's say you can't, I don't know, you can't do leg day for, you tweaked your knee or you can't do upper body because you've hurt your shoulder or something like that. And you're seeing your chiropractor or your body worker, you're rehabbing it, you're with your physical therapist and they're rehabbing it out with you. You can continue to sauna, right? And when you need to step away from the weights, and you can limit the amount of protein degradation, right? So you can limit the amount of oxidative stress and proteins that are going to be marked for destruction through sauna use because you are activating those heat shock proteins. So I think that that's really cool. And for all of you muscle mommies that are out there listening, this is a great way for you to be getting more bang for your buck. If you're already spending 45 minutes, 60 minutes in the gym, you know, as a wind down recovery practice, it can be immediately after, or it can be, you know, within the 24 hours that you train. I think this is a reasonable amount for you to be thinking, you know, reasonable time frame for you to be thinking to get into the sauna. Couple of the things I'll mention is nitric oxide. Okay. So saunas also have been shown to improve circulation by increasing production of nitric oxide. This is basically a compound that dilates the blood vessels, right? It helps that post-workout recovery. A recent 2023, very recent, looked at infrared sauna sessions and how those can reduce muscle soreness and improve perceived recovery after resistance training. And they found that they were able to do that. So infrared saunas were able to help to reduce the muscle soreness. They were also able to improve the nitric oxide that was circulating. I'll link that study in the show notes as well. And then there was another small study on NO, on nitric oxide. They looked at long distance runners and found that post-exercise sauna increased their run time to exhaustion by like 32% after just 3 weeks, meaning that how long they could run before they got exhausted increased by 32%. And part of that is because of the nitric oxide, right? It's part of that is because of that NO that's having its impact on the arterial system, which I thought was really cool. And then I'll close with brain health. And I'll say, when I say brain health, I'm talking about the anatomy and the structure of the brain, but I'm also talking about our mood and our affect. Okay. So when we think about brain health as we age, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, even just like subjective, you know, an impaired SCI or MCI, like moderate or subjective dementia, this is something that women want to be also thinking about as well. And again, heat stress has been shown to increase the expression of something called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor, more than exercise use alone. So exercise also does it. Exercise drives a BDNF, drives a brain growth. So if you're already doing that, check that box. But if you want more of it, combining again the exercise and the sauna is going to increase that proliferation, that neurogenesis in the brain. And, you know, an increase in that neurogenesis is also thought to be involved in enhanced learning. So if you are learning a new skill, you've gone into menopause, your kids have left the house, and you're like, what new skill am I? I'm going to learn Portuguese, or I'm going to learn Arabic, or I'm going to learn pottery or whatever. Your BDNF, like driving up your BDNF, is also going to help you learn those skills quicker. And of course, it's going to also modulate plasticity and long-term memory. And heat stress has also been shown to ameliorate anxiety and depression from early stressful events. Politics aside, it's been a really stressful time to be a human. And I think that we're seeing much more mental health issues now than I think we ever have, not only in adults, but our beautiful kids as well. Saunas can also help with that. And just in sort of tying this up with Alzheimer's, study in 2017, the journal is Age and Aging, but it'll be linked in the show notes. Moderate to high frequency of sauna use was tied to a lower risk of Alzheimer's disease and dementia, both SCI and MCI. A similar study, 14,000 Finnish men and women found that those who use a sauna at least 9 to 12 times per month, so it's about 3 times or 4 times a week, were less than half as likely to develop dementia over a 20-year period. Okay, so again, long-term study, one of the interventions that seems to be very positively correlated, at least with outcomes here, is sauna use 3 to 4 times a week. Very lastly, we'll talk about endorphins, the feel-good stuff. So on top of the cardiovascular disease and the hypertrophy and the big juicy brains, you're also going to feel great, right? So stress mitigation, of course, as you know, is a science or a skill, I should say, that should be mastered in perimenopause and menopause. And endorphins are certainly upregulated when we are using saunas. So endorphins, for those of you that are not aware of the mechanism, they're natural opioids, actually. So we always talk about the opioid crisis. That's an exogenous source of opioids. And our endogenous sources of opioids are endorphins. They are part of our body's natural painkiller system, which is going to block pain messages from spreading around the body to the brain. This is called antinociception. So what is maybe less studied or gets less attention, but I think worth bringing to you, is that when we are in pain, the body will produce a peptide known as dynorphin, right? So this is like a kappa opioid, and it's generally responsible for the sensation of dysphoria, so like general pain. And the discomfort experienced, let's say, in intense exercise and exposure to extreme heat, like in a sauna, even things like when you go to an Indian restaurant, let's say, and you eat some spicy food, or at least I'll say the white person. And when I go with my Indian friends who laugh at me because I'm having the butter chicken and they're getting the vindaloo, everything, or even things like capcate, like if you have like red peppers or jalapeno peppers, something like that, the pain that you experience is due to the release of dynorphin. Okay. So it's this peptide that is responsible for the experience of pain. We all know that when you've been doing squats and your body's like, can you stop? This really hurts. I don't want you to do one more rep. Please stop right now, right? So this happens in sauna use as well. So the release of dynorphin causes an upregulation in opioid or the sensitization of opioid receptors, which is going to interact with beta endorphins, right? So this is part of the reason why after you finish a grueling leg workout and your legs have been screaming at you, that you are the most peaceful woman or man on the planet. Like you will donate to anyone, you'll give a stranger a hug. You know, it's sort of the underpinning of, you know, if you ever heard of a runner's high, it's from that direct discomfort of physical exercise, right? So what I'm trying to say here is the greater the discomfort, so sitting in a sauna when you really want to get out, or continuing to do squats when you really want to stop, that the better the endorphin high will be afterwards. Okay. So we can also upregulate our feel good, like we can upregulate our feel good system through endorphins by sitting uncomfortably in a sauna. So I think that those are really, really cool. There's been some other studies that have looked at ADHD and sauna. So there's some thinking that increasing your norepinephrine, which happens when you sit in a, you know, when you do exercise or when you're sitting in a hot sauna, but also increasing our capacity to store norepinephrine for later release may also be involved in helping children focus or even adults focus. So whether it's ADHD or ADD, depending on your time of diagnosis, we'll say, it seems like sauna can also help with that. And you know, women, you know, we get culturally, it's tough. It can be tough to be a woman. So we do often see in perimenopause and menopause, more mood and affect changes. And even if you're a fertile cycling woman, right, you know, that the luteal phase of your cycle often more emotionally sensitive, let's say, than other times of the month might be. So sauna use would be a wonderful adjunct to your already wonderful health routine. So I just want to talk a little bit about my routine. I promised I would talk about some of the things that I've done. So I did a lot of research before jumping into owning a sauna. I went with the Sunlighten sauna. It's an infrared full spectrum sauna. And as I mentioned, we had this extra bedroom in the basement. I mean, they were calling it a bedroom. I don't really think it's like no one's going to live there. It's sort of the back end of the home, but they called it a bedroom. We tried to make it my office. We tried to make it a bedroom. None of those things worked. And we finally said, let's just make this our health room. So we put our Sunlighten infrared full spectrum sauna there. I also have my Culture cold plunge sauna in there. I have some foam rollers. I have some massage guns in there as well. And I preheat my sauna now every night with the exception of Wednesday night because I am, you know, I just have commitments with my boys. So I preheat it for about 45 minutes and I have an alarm that goes off on my phone about 6:15 and then I get into and I have an app, Sunlighten has an app. So I'll just go into my phone and open up the app and preheat it. I get in at 7 o'clock and I sit in there for about, right now I can get in there for about 45 minutes. I'd like to actually be able to stay in there a little longer, but my tolerance, at least at the time of this recording, is still at about 45 minutes. And then I throw on a podcast, listen to some music, maybe I'll try to meditate, or I'll just try to focus on my breathing. The sauna is large enough for me to be able to lie down as well. So being able to do that actually is part of the reason why I'm able to go for as long as I can, because I can't sit for 45 minutes to do anything. So that's what I have been doing as of late. So I don't actually pair it immediately with my exercise in the way that I've been describing the literature does, but I am still within that 24-hour period. Like for example, tonight I worked out this morning. Tonight I'm going to be in the sauna and I'm going to be enjoying about 45 minutes, you know, slowly pushing it to an hour in that sauna. And I actually find doing it in the evening really does also help my sleep. So I get really hot. I'm finished at about, call it 7:45. And then I'll go back upstairs and I'll start, you know, putting my oils in my hair and my skin, all my little wind down routine things that I like to do. So the oils in my hair, the serums on my face, as I like to say, I like to look like a glazed donut by the time I'm finished. If my skin is not glistening and shiny from all the products I've put on it, then I have not done my evening routine correctly. So that is my current routine. And I will continue that even through the summertime. And I will probably on the weekends, what I'm hoping to start doing on the weekends is actually spend some time going back and forth between the cold plunge and the sauna. Currently, I'm doing the cold plunge in the morning before my exercise, and then going to exercise and then doing sauna in the evening. But I think what I'd like to do on the weekends is I'd actually like to be able to, you know, do my workout as I normally do, but then spend some time going back and forth. So really going hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, and seeing how that amplifies my effects, my recovery, because I'm usually very sore, especially with legs. I find that I'm often very sore with legs after a workout. So there you have it. There's the sauna science, and there is the sauna routine that I am currently using, the brand that I'm using, all of that stuff. We will have clickable show notes for all of the, like everything is going to be clickable in terms of the studies that I've mentioned. I'll even put in, if you'd like, I'll put in the actual product that I settled on as well. And I hope that you also find, whether it's your gym membership or you have a sauna in the home, something like that, where you can begin to replicate some of the science that we have talked about here today. So with that, my Betties, I will leave you and bid you adieu, and we will see you next time.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And I must give you the obligatory legal and medical disclaimer here. This podcast, Better with Dr. Stephanie, is for general information only. And the advice, recommendations we discuss do not replace medicine, chiropractic, or any other primary healthcare provider's advice, treatment, or care. In the consumption of this podcast, there is no doctor-patient relationship that has been formed, and the use and implementation of the information discussed are at the sole discretion of the listener. The information and opinions shared on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for primary care, diagnosis, or treatment. In other words, guys, be smart about this. Take it with a grain of salt. Take this information to your primary healthcare provider and have a discussion with him or her to make the best choice that is for you. Remember, I am a doctor, but I am not your doctor. And these conversations are meant for educational purposes only.